Is capitalism compatible with Catholicism? We're going to take a look at capitalism and the free market and whether Catholics should embrace this economic system. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, I just want to encourage people to like and subscribe to the channel, let other people know about it, and we can continue to grow the channel and let other people know about what we're doing here in Crisis and what's going on in the church and in the world. Also, just you can follow us at Crisis Mag at just about all the different social media sites like Twitter or Gitter or Gab or MeWe or Facebook or whatever other ones I'm forgetting. We stream these live on these Crisis Point podcasts live on Tuesdays, and you can get them live on YouTube and Odyssey and watch them live. Or of course, they'll come up afterwards on all the different podcast feeds after we're finished. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. So I'm talking about this because recently there was a tweet, something on Twitter, a Catholic account was condemning capitalism and was saying that popes had condemned capitalism, the papal social teachings had condemned capitalism. And this is just something that I kind of pushed back at it a little bit. And this is a debate that comes up all the time in Catholic circles. This is nothing new. The other account was saying wasn't new. What I was saying, not new. There's a debate within Catholicism about what is it, what can Catholics accept capitalism? Can they embrace capitalism, or do they need to condemn capitalism? What are the problems of capitalism from a Catholic perspective? What are the good things about it? And so that's what I wanted to talk about today, was just basically to talk about capitalism from a perspective of a Catholic. Now, here's the thing. I am not going to go through papal social teaching on this. And some people might immediately be like, well, you're not really addressing the issue from a Catholic standpoint if you don't do that. Now, I encourage people read the Catholic the papal social teaching encyclicals by Leo XIII and other popes, particularly in the late 19th, early 20th century. There's a lot of good in them. However, I would argue that popes have no special competency when it comes to economics. Just like, for example, Pope Francis a few years ago wrote an encyclical on climate change and the environment, Laudato Si was its name, and he has no special competency on the best way to help our environment. So when he makes suggestions in his encyclical about here are the things we can do to improve the environment, to combat climate change, whatever, he has no special competency in that. There might not even be man-made climate change. Potentially, a Catholic can believe that, and so the Pope cannot state, for example, okay, there's man-made climate change, and here's the best way to address it, and we have to accept it as some infallible teaching. He actually has no competency in that area. Another example is Pope Paul VI wrote an encyclical back in the late 60s called Populorum Progressio. And it was about economics and the development of man. And most people today look at that and understand that that has a lot of flaws in it from a perspective of political systems, economic systems, and understanding how the world operates. And that's fine. We absolutely can say that as Catholics, because again, no competency in that area, no special competency. Obviously, you could have a pope elected who could be a great economist and he would have competency. But the charism of the office does not give him any special competency in the area of economics or politics, things like that. And another example is, like, for example, Pope Francis pushing the COVID vaccines. He has no medical competency, no knowledge of, no special knowledge or charism in knowing whether or not how effective COVID vaccines are, for example. We don't look to the Pope for that. So if he's pushing it, yes, he may be right to do that. He may be wrong to do that. But we don't look to him first. I don't go to the Pope to decide whether or not a medical procedure is effective or not. And I don't think anybody should do that. Now, so what we're going to do here, though, today is look at it from a perspective of reason, because God has given us reason, the ability to reason, to look at the world and to determine how things operate. This is a classically Catholic way to look at it, actually, is to use our own reason in these areas that call for us to use reason. We don't believe in fetism, where basically the Pope says, I don't know that 2 + 2 = 4 because the Pope tells me that. I know 2 + 2 = 4 because of reason. That's how I know these things. And that's a Catholic way to look at it. It's a very non-Catholic way to look at it, Islam looks at it like this. Some Protestant sects look at the world like this. Like basically, if God says it, then it's true. We look at it more like, okay, this is the way that God made the world, and we can determine these different ways through reason. And so that's how we're going to do it today. Also, another thing is, this is not going to be a full treatment of capitalism or anything like that. I try to keep these podcasts relatively short. It would take hours, and it would take a semester-long economics course probably to explain this in more detail. So we're just going to give an overview here instead of a real in-depth look. One thing I also want to mention is that when I say the church doesn't have, or the Pope doesn't have any special competency in this, it's not that the Pope can't, or the church can't, say things that relate to economics, because obviously we're moral beings and there's moral decisions that are made in different economic systems and in different ways in which people interact. So obviously the church has something to say when it comes to these moral actions of people. And so, for example, if I walked up to if I was hungry and I walked up to somebody and I pointed a gun at them and I said, "Give me your food," that's a moral action. It's an economic action as well. And so obviously the church can say that's an immoral act to try to take food from somebody else. Now, obviously there might be situations where if I'm starving or something like that, but the point is, if I beat somebody up or I shot somebody and took their food, that's an immoral action. The church has every right to say that's immoral. I think natural law often tells us that's immoral as well. So I'm not trying to act like the church or say that the church or the Pope can't say anything about economic systems. But I do think the majority of what we come to, our conclusions we should come to about economics, comes from the use of reason. Another thing I want to say before I even get started in all of this is that Catholics are free to disagree on this. This is where I really think we get hung up. We want a Catholic answer to every question under the sun. And we want it to be like, if a Catholic doesn't believe this, doesn't accept my way of looking at this, he's going against the church's teaching. That is absolutely false. Catholics can disagree about the best economic system that a society can use. There is no Catholic economic system. I know a lot of, arguments for distributism make it sound like that's the Catholic way of doing economics. That is not the case. They would say something like, there's capitalism that's wrong, there's socialism that's wrong, and then there's the Catholic way. No, absolutely false. There is no one Catholic economic system. There are certain economic systems that go more against, that will lead to more Catholic, more immoral actions, that obviously they wouldn't be a Catholic way of looking at things. But it's false to say that there's a one economic system that's the Catholic one. I don't claim that for capitalism or for distributism or anything else like that. I'm simply stating that Catholics can disagree, but here's what I'm thinking and what a lot of people are thinking when it comes to capitalism, looking at it from the use of reason. So and another thing I wanted to mention was at Crisis Magazine, for example, we're happy to run articles that would be critiquing capitalism, that would be critiquing the free market, and as well as those praising the free market and praising capitalism. Because again, I do think this is an area in which Catholics can disagree, and we can have a vigorous debate about it. And that's what we're supposed to actually have, is a debate. We're not supposed to shut down debate by telling other people, "Oh, you're not Catholic. That's not Catholic to think that, because Pope so-and-so said this. Therefore, if you dare disagree with that, you're no longer Catholic." Well, that's not how Catholicism works. And we've seen this problem in so many ways in today's world with Pope Francis. So many Catholics who are saying that Pope Francis says this, therefore it is, we must accept it de fide, we must accept it infallibly, and that's just not the way it works. So let me go ahead now, though, and jump into a discussion of capitalism. But I do think I need to take a step back before capitalism and just talk about economics in general. So what is economics? Now, before I get really started in this, I want to recommend a book to you, and that is Basic Economics by Thomas Sowell. This is by far the best book on economics ever written, in my opinion. It is an excellent textbook. It's not even it's a textbook. I know colleges that use it as a textbook. I wish more would, but it's easy to read. I just highly recommend Basic Economics by Thomas Sowell. It will help you understand economics because I really think a lot of the debate that happens in Catholic circles and outside Catholic circles when it comes to these different economic systems, a lot of it is a different understanding of what economics are. What is economics? And a false understanding of economics. And I think that we need to dig in first. So let me give a definition that Thomas Sowell uses in his book from Lionel Robbins. Economics is the study of the use of scarce resources which have alternative uses. So economics is the study of the use of scarce resources which have alternative uses. So let's break that down a little bit. First of all, economics would not exist in the Garden of Eden. Economics does not exist in heaven because there are no scarce resources in heaven, for example. There is no economic system in heaven because economics is talking about scarce resources. So, for example, I can't get everything I want. Let's say I want a house that is, I don't know, a mansion. I want 20 cars. I want 10 boats. I want the best food. I want a chef that works for me full time. I want a maid. I want all these things. I can't have all that more than likely because I don't have the ability to buy all that. And not if every single person on earth wanted that, they could not have that. Because obviously the chef who and the maid who work for somebody, they don't have a chef and maid working for them in their mansion sitting around all day. So there are scarce resources. And obviously it's more serious than that. The question of whether or not everybody even has the resources they need to survive. There have been times in history in which many people did not have everything they needed to survive. And even today, in certain countries, there are many citizens who do not have everything they need to survive. So the point is, we can't have everything that we want. Sometimes we can't even have everything we need. And so economics is the study of those scarce resources and how they can be distributed best in a society, how they're best used so the most people get the most things that they need or want. And another aspect of economics is that it is a study of the use of scarce resources which have alternative uses. What that means is we have many goods and services, many products, but they can be used in different ways. For example, plastic. Plastics used in tons of different ways, but there have to be decisions made of how to use plastic. Do you want to, for example, should every single every bit of plastic in the world should all be used to make plastic straws? I mean, I think we all know that's kind of ridiculous, but it could be used for that. If there was a huge demand for plastic straws, that's what everybody wanted, then maybe all the plastic companies in the world would all make plastic straws. And so the question of these alternative uses comes into economics as well. Is how do you decide how to use all the resources that you have at hand? So if you have coal, if you have iron or things like that, how do you decide how best to use them? That's what comes into play here. Plastic can be used, for example, in making a car. There's certain aspects of a car that use plastic. But then, like I said, we have plastic straws. You have plastic containers. You have all these different ways. How is it decided how best to use those? So, for example, in communist the Soviet Union, often it was a central planning committee that would decide, okay, we think we're going to produce, we have these factories producing these goods and services or these resources, or whatever the case may be. They would decide, here's how we best can use them to best help the most people. They would make those decisions. And so that's what economics is studying. And I think we need to remember that. Now, the best economic systems are the ones that use these scarce resources in the most efficient manner. That's the key right there. For example, one country A, which has maybe one economic system, and country B, which has different economic systems, they might have the exact same amount of electricity production, for example. However, one of those two countries might have a lot more people having electricity available to them than another country because their economic system uses it more efficiently. It distributes it among the people more efficiently. That's what economics is talking about. A lot of times today, unfortunately, people think economics has to do with money. Now, obviously money is part of economics, but it's not ultimately really about money. It's not about like getting rich, getting the most people rich or something like that. Economics is simply trying to figure out how scarce resources are used in different ways and using alternative uses. So I think that's very important. And economics also is a study of cause and effect. What happens when people decide to do this with their resources as opposed to that? What are the effects of making these decisions? And so, for example, if you have a central planning committee that decides we're going to use our plastic in this way, this is how we're going to make people use plastic. It's going to be illegal to use plastic in other ways. Then what will be the effect of that? What will happen if that decision is made? That's what economics is studying. It's studying this cause and effect. It's not a matter of intentions. So, for example, if the Central Planning Committee might have the best intentions in their decision of how to distribute plastic in a community, but that's not what economics is trying to decide, who has the best intentions. What's trying to decide is which is the best actual system to efficiently use that plastic or whatever the resource is in the best, most efficient way. Because a lot of times that's what we get debates on is, a politician will say, we need to do this because it's going to help the most people. And people just say, well, he wants to help the most people. That's what we should do. No, that's not what matters. So if, for example, the Federal Reserve decides to raise interest rates, their intention might be to curb inflation and to help the economy and to help more people in our culture. It doesn't matter what their intentions are. What matters is what actually happens when the interest rate rises, for example. What are the incentives now? Because what happens is when you, for example, rise the interest rates, incentives change. People decide, okay, I'm more incentivized, for example, not to take out a loan if interest rate raises. I'm more incentivized to save. That's just a very basic example of all the different incentives that go into our decisions. We look at, okay, if I, for example, if the interest rates go down, I might be more likely to buy a house because I can get a better loan. Interest rates go up, I might be less likely to buy a house. So therefore, the prices of houses might go down if interest rates go up, because people are willing to pay less or less likely. There's less demand for new housing to move if interest rates go up. These are the type of things that economics studies. And I think we need to understand that. It's not a matter of, economics is saying who can get the most rich or something like that. So that's what economics is in a nutshell, basic economics. Now, this is important to understand because if you note, it didn't really talk any, when I talk about economics, I wasn't talking anything about the spiritual goods of people. But we are, as human beings, we're both body and soul. We have physical needs and we have spiritual needs. Economics is really only addressing our physical needs, because if you think about it, economics addresses scarce resources, how to use scarce resources. It's not talking about our spiritual needs, it's talking about our physical needs. There are no scarce resources when it comes to spiritual needs. Now, yes, I acknowledge there's a need for churches and the sacraments and priests and all that, and those are scarce resources. However, God can actually supply in abundance our spiritual needs. If, for example, you're living in the Soviet Union and you have no access to the sacraments, God in that situation can supply for your spiritual needs. Economics doesn't really apply here, the study of economics, because we're not talking about how to distribute scarce resources. Now, when a bishop, for example, is deciding how many parishes to have, where his priests would be assigned, stuff like that, that actually is economics, because we have scarce resources. But strictly speaking, our spiritual needs are not our spiritual resources are not scarce because God supplies them and He's infinite. And so economics really is focused on the body and not the soul. And that's why we use reason to determine the best economic system, not a idea of a fetism where the Pope just tells us the best system. That's not how it works. Now, that being said, I do want to make it clear, because we're a body-soul composite, these things are interrelated. And so the economic system you live under can impact your soul. Because an economic system, for example, that strips you of your dignity as a human person can impact your soul. or an economic system in which you're basically just consuming porn all day. Obviously, that affects your soul. If you have porn available to you at all times, that can impact your soul. So I don't want to act like there's no relationship between the body and soul and economics and things like that. However, strictly speaking, we're talking about economics. We are talking about that use of scarce resources, which have alternative uses, which does confine it then to the physical world, not the spiritual world. Okay, so now that we've kind of, this has all been introductory in a sense, because now I want to talk about capitalism itself. And so let me define capitalism as it found in Webster. So I think this is a big thing, is always definitions. Often I see debates on social media in particular where the competing underlying definitions are different. And so you can't really have a discussion. But Webster's just defines it as capitalism as an economic system characterized by private or corporate ownership of capital goods, by investments that are determined by private decision, and by prices, production, and distribution of goods that are determined mainly by competition in a free market. I also saw elsewhere it said, capitalistic ownership means owners control the factors of production and derive their income from their ownership. That gives them the ability to operate their companies efficiently. It also provides them with the incentive to maximize profit. Capitalism requires a free market economy in order to succeed. It distributes goods and services according to the laws of supply and demand. So we see a few different things in here. First of all, in capitalism, there's private ownership of goods or corporate ownership of goods. In other words, the state is not the owner of capital goods. Secondly, we see that there's this idea of a free market. That's probably the most important thing, that people are free and to voluntarily choose what they do with their goods and services, what they do with their resources. They can sell their resources. They can work for their resources, whatever the case may be. They're not being told by a king or a state government or anything like that what to do. So, for example, obviously slavery would be capitalistic because it's anti-free market, because there'd be certain people who would not be free to make decisions about what they did with their goods and services, how they produce things. Another thing it mentions is the incentive to maximize profit. That's a key point in a capitalistic system, a free market system, is this idea that you're trying to maximize your profit. And we'll talk about profit more in a minute. Now, one thing I will note is that capitalism and free market are often used interchangeably in today's world. And I think that's okay. There is a different emphasis in each one of them. But I think ultimately, when most people talk about capitalism, actually, I think most people when they talk about capitalism are actually wrong about what capitalism is. But what I would say is a true definition of capitalism would be a free market system. A free market system is the key point of capitalism. If you don't have a free market, a truly free market, you don't have a truly capitalistic system. Now, note, economic systems can be a little bit of different things. We rarely in this world have a pure system of, for example, capitalism, or a pure socialistic or pure communistic system. That rarely happens. What we usually have is a melding of multiple different systems in one. But we're talking about capitalism, a free market system, as it really is, a true free market system. Another thing to note is that private property is another key point of capitalism, that individuals and corporations are free to own their own property, and you can't take it from them. That's the key point, is that you cannot use somebody else's property without their permission. And in a communist system, for example, the state would have ownership of all property. And so a state can determine what to do with any property. You don't actually own anything. Now, often even in the most communist system, people do own certain things, but in general, it would be the idea that the state does own everything. Whereas in a capitalist system or a free market system, individuals can own their own stuff and you can't take it from them. So if I own a house, if I own a few acres, something like that, nobody can take that from me, and nobody can use it without my permission. So they couldn't all of a sudden build a road right in the middle of my property without my permission. Somebody couldn't decide to put keep their chickens on my property without my permission. So that's a very key point. And the church, I will say this, the church has often talked about the importance of private property, that it is a right that we have. And I think that's because now we're talking about a moral decision. Because think about it, if somebody came and just started using my property, let's say they wanted to raise their chickens on my property, that's stealing. That is actually a violation of one of the Ten Commandments. So the church in this instance has spoken out about the importance of private property, because if somebody could just come and take my property, take my goods, maybe they just come into my house and they take some of my stuff, that's just stealing if they don't have my permission. And so private property actually is a key component of the command, the command against stealing, that you do have a right to your ownership of your property. And so we talk about then profit, we talk about private property, we talk about the free market. Ultimately, the free market is the key point here, because and what is the free market? It's the ability to have voluntary exchanges. That's the important point there, voluntary exchanges. There's no fraud, no force being used. The two F words when it comes to capitalism is fraud and force. Nobody's forcing you to sell something or to buy something. You have a voluntary exchange. You decide for yourself what you will do with your goods and services, what you will do, what you'll do with your money, what you do with your property, what will you do with your time, what will you do with your work, and things like that. It's a voluntary exchange. Nobody's forced to do anything. And what happens in the system then is price is the driving force behind the efficiency of the free market. So price is determined by millions of exchanges throughout the price of different things. So the fact that, for example, the webcam I'm using costs a certain amount, this microphone costs something else, the lighting here costs something else, all these different things, they have a certain price. Well, how is that price determined in a free market? It'd be completely based upon supply and demand and what people are willing to buy, pay for it, and what people are willing to sell for it. But it's all voluntary. Nobody should decide that this webcam costs, let's say, $100. Let's say a bunch of people, poor people, we decide we want poor people to have webcams. And so the state comes in and says, okay, webcam developers, you can't charge more than $50 for webcams. Well, that's not a free market anymore, because it's not a voluntary exchange. The webcam companies are being forced to sell webcams for a certain amount. And so that would no longer be a free market. But price is what is really the driving force of efficiency in the market. How is something priced, for example? A lot of people think something is priced based upon how much it costs to make. So let's say something costs $5 to make. Well, you sell it for something a little bit over $5, or maybe you sell it for $5. I mean, it just depends on who the person you're talking to is. That's not how price is determined. It's really unrelated to how much you make for it. Because I could make something that costs me $100 to make, but it's completely worthless to anybody. Nobody wants to buy it. So I'm a terrible artist. My daughter is a wonderful artist. She's wonderful at painting and all that stuff, but I'm terrible. Let's say I draw something and it takes me a lot of time, a lot of energy, and actually and also resources to make this. Maybe just we'll ballpark and we'll say it's $50 that it takes me to make all this, or maybe $100. Well, if I tried to sell for over that, I would not get anybody to buy that, because it's worthless. It's, you know, most somebody might buy it for a couple bucks just for something to use for their, to place things on it as a table or something like that, as a table mat. So the point is, it's not how much it costs to make something that determines the price of something. It's the value that people have in it. And this is the most efficient way in which a market can work, is through price. Because then what happens is, people will make things based upon if they can make a profit on it, if they can price it such that they make a profit, because other people really value that. So what happens is, the things that are most valued in a society are the things that people most want to make in a society. So it's not a matter of somebody on high, a central planning committee, saying, okay, I think the people want this the most, so we're going to produce most of this, this product, this widget. No, what's happening is the society itself saying, we want this widget more than any other widget. So we're willing to pay the most for this widget. So what happens is, people are willing to make it for the most. They're most willing to make that widget because the most people want. So this is the efficiency of the free market, is through price. Now, there are different types of economic systems, as we know. I've already mentioned communism. I mentioned socialism. I mentioned distributism. I'll talk about distributism a little bit more in a minute. But basically, in socialism, communism, I mean, those words are used somewhat interchangeably. There are differences between them. For the purposes of what we're talking about here, it essentially means state control of the economy. So a small number of people make decisions for everybody. So, for example, the Central Planning Committee would say, we think this much corn needs to be made for our society. We think this many cars need to be produced for society. And they would determine that based upon whatever ways they would determine it, maybe a study of the market, maybe they got degrees or something like that. But they would be making that decision. And that's state-controlled economy. Whereas in a free market, the number of cars that are made is based simply upon the demand for it, because based upon price, price would indicate, would be our signal of how, because if the price of cars start going up in a free market, then what happens is more people start making cars because they know they can make more profit because there's a higher demand for it now. If the price of corn, if corn is not in high demand, the price of it goes down, less people start making it, growing, I should say, in the case of corn. So what happens is that makes sense. If less people demand corn, less people should make corn. I keep saying make corn. Obviously, you grow corn. I do know at least that much about farming. But and cars, if more people are wanting cars, then more people start making cars. And so that's how it works out. But in a state, in a communist system, the state would determine who makes, you know, how many ears of corn get produced, how many cars get made, and things like that. Distributism, what it is really more geared towards is it wants to spread out ownership of products, of resources. So instead of having, they're against the idea of one, a small number of companies having most of the ownership of products and services and resources. So that's why it's called distributism. It's distributing ownership of resources to a larger group. Now, the problem with these other systems other than a true free market, is that you need to use force, state force, authority force, whether it's a king, a monarchy, or a democracy, or a republic, or whatever, or a communist system, whatever the case may be. They need to use force to make things happen. Because when a central planning committee, for example, decides we're going to make this many ears of corn, we're going to produce this many ears of corn, we're going to produce this many cars. Well, what happens if the companies decide not to do that? Let's say a company decides we're not going to produce this many cars, we're going to produce more. Well, the state would be the enforcement arm of that central planning committee, and they would decide to force these people by gunpoint, eventually, by gunpoint, no, you have to make this many cars, not that many cars. Doesn't matter what you think, how many cars should be made, we're going to tell you. Doesn't matter how many ears of corn you want to grow, we're going to tell you how many. If you don't do it, we're going to point a gun at your head and force you to do it. And ultimately, every economic system other than the free market ultimately uses force. Now, the use of force by the state is not necessarily always a bad thing. I'm not an anarchist. I do think there are cases in which a state does have the authority to use force. For example, if I'm about to kill somebody, I have a gun to their head, there's no problem with a cop taking me down and using force to stop me. If I steal something from somebody, there's no problem with the state coming in and walking in, the cop saying, you got to give that back, and you're going to jail for doing that. So it's not that the state can never use force. However, because the state using force is such a serious thing, it is a moral thing, there better be a really good reason for the state to step in. And so if it's just a matter of, okay, we're going to decide how many ears of corn are going to be grown, I think we start having some moral problems here, some moral issues here. And this is one of the reasons why I think the free market is the best system we have in place. A lot of times Catholics are very uncomfortable with the idea of profit being the driving force in an economy. But again, a profit is a driving force because it distributes resources the most fairly. Because what happens is what people want the most is what gets produced the most, because price is determined by supply and demand. And so profit is going to be, your best profit is when you sell something for more than you make it. So for example, let's say I create a product that everybody wants. It's a way to produce clean water better at your house. And people are like, we have a problem. We don't have clean water. And it costs me, let's say it costs me $1 million to make it, to create it. And then it costs maybe just a few dollars for each one I produce after that. Well, I'm going to price it. If nobody else has created this and there's a huge demand for it, I'm going to price it as high as I can based upon the idea that the most people want it. But here's the thing, in a free market, once I've made it, somebody else can usually make it. And if they do that, then all of a sudden the price is going to go down. They're going to charge less. Then I might charge less. And we keep charging less until a kind of an equilibrium exists where demand tapers off because the supply has gotten so great. And so this is why we have freedom in this exchange. Nobody's saying you have to make this, you have to buy this. What's happening is that the market itself, and the market has this, it's so evil. All the market is a bunch of people making independent decisions based upon their own self-interest. It's not a matter of, I put money above all else. All I care about is money. This is a matter, because often the free market, what it's doing is it's helping lift people out of poverty. It's not just a matter of making people rich, making your Jeff Bezos or your Elon Musk or something like that. It's a matter of putting the poor person, giving them the opportunity to rise up out of that and to have resources for cheap that they couldn't afford elsewhere so they can feed themselves. And in fact, capitalism has been the economic system that has raised more people out of poverty than any other economic system in the history of the world. That's just indisputable. That is a fact that we have to recognize, that it has lifted more people out of poverty than any other economic system. But what happens because in capitalism, helping other people actually is in your self-interest. Because by providing services and products that other people want, you're giving them what they want. You're actually, what you're doing is you're helping, you're giving yourself more profit. You're working in your own self-interest. That's the kind of the genius. And it is counterintuitive. People think that if you act in your self-interest, you're acting against other people. But in reality, in a true free market system, acting in your self-interest helps the most people because you're giving people what they want. Again, this is in a true free, pure free market system where there's no state interference. And so there's no authority, whether it be a king or a state government or whatever the case may be, there's no authority forcing you to do certain things. And that is a more moral system. If nobody's telling you, you have to make this or you have to make that or anything like that, you have to distribute, for example, you have to get rid of certain things because you have too much or something like that. Instead, it just says, do what is in your self-interest and that will actually be the best for everybody. Now, another thing I want to note is that, boy, I'm going long, but I'm going to keep going because I'm on a roll here. Another thing I want to note is that today's American economy is not pure free market capitalism. Now, some people might say, oh, you're just acting like the communists. Oh, true communism hasn't been tried. I think like capitalism has been tried on a pretty massive scale over the past couple of centuries, and it's worked very well. There hasn't been maybe a 100% free market anywhere, but there's been more free markets than we have today. The number one example I would use to show that we're not in a free market today is the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve sets basically interest rates and they create money. I know they don't actually set interest rate and they don't actually create money, but basically their decisions create money. They set interest rates. That is antithetical to the free market. Because again, for example, interest rates. If interest rates go up naturally, people are more likely to want to save. And that's when interest rates goes up in a free market, that's an indication that more saving needs to happen. When interest rates go down, it means that there's more money available and people are more likely to spend. And so that's actually that's a good thing. Interest rates in a free market make these help. They're signals, they're price signals, telling people what it is should you invest right now? Should you invest for the long term? Should you save? Should you spend? Things like that. Those type of things are good things. But what happens is the Federal Reserve, by setting that, they completely disrupt the free market because they basically are saying we're telling you, you need to spend right now. You need to save right now. The market's not telling you that. The free decisions of millions of people aren't telling you that. Instead, a few people in the Federal Reserve are telling you that. And so that is probably the best example of why we don't live in a free market right now. I mean, other examples include all the regulations. For example, if you want to be a hairdresser, you need to get a license from the government to do that. That's obviously not a free market. If I can't like set up in my house ability to cut your hair or something like that without regulations, that's not the free market. Now, here's the thing that when we're talking about from a Catholic perspective, we have a hard time with this idea of an economic system that's talking about physical goods, because we know as Catholics, physical goods aren't everything. They're not the determining force of how we live a happy and good life. There's far more to this world than just simply physical goods. However, we should strive as Catholics to live in an efficient economic system, because abject poverty is not something that as Catholics we want people to live in. And abject poverty is exactly what happens under, for example, a communist system. And so we don't want people having to stand in line for hours just to buy bread, because the economic system is so faulty. That is not something as Catholics we should ever support. We want people to be able to easily go to the store and buy bread. That's a good thing. That's a good thing of that Catholics should always be encouraging, that even the poorest person can go down to the local grocery store and buy bread. And so we shouldn't put ourselves in such a pious way of looking at things like, oh, I'm not concerned about like filthy lucre, money and things, profit and things like that. What I care about is the spiritual world. I care about holiness, people growing in holiness. Well, obviously we all care about that, but you're setting up a false dichotomy there. If you're basically part of our faith is that we want to help the poor. We want to lift them out of poverty. We want people to live in a way that they're not like wondering that day, can I feed my kids today? Or will my kids go hungry? We don't want mass starvation or things like that. We don't want also guns being pointed at people's head to tell them what they have to do in an economic system like that happens in communism. That's against human freedom. So there's nothing wrong or un-Catholic about advocating for a free market system in which profit is the driving force. I'm not saying there aren't dangers of that, but it's not there's nothing evil in that in and of itself. We'll talk about the dangers here in a second. Another thing I want to bring up is the fact that, listen, we all want to live in the Shire. Everyone, all us Catholics, we want to live in the Shire. We want to live in this beautiful community where people get along and there's no massive corporations. There's no Jeff Bezos shoving, you know, woke ideology on us. Maybe a couple weeks ago, I talked about the reason all these corporations have woke ideologies. It does not have to do with capitalism or the free market. So listen to that if you want to hear about that. We want this. So that's kind of the goal of distributism, is this Shire-like existence. And I share that goal. I would love to live in an environment like that. You know, live out in a small community where people have the resources they need. The wealth is distributed in a nice way that nobody really has a need, but nobody's lording over others. Yes, that would be great. However, to make that happen in our fallen world would take immoral means and ultimately would not end up with that. Again, it's not about good intentions. It's about what are the actual incentives in an economic system and what are the ways in which people will actually act in real life. And so I would just say that if you have an economic system that, for example, caps out how big a corporation can get, what's happening is you are going against what the market itself is actually desiring, what people are designing. They're saying this company, in a free market, they're saying this company is doing a great job and we're going to reward it because we want the products it's selling. We want to continue to produce things. We want to have more profit so it can continue to produce things that we want. That's what a capitalistic system would do. And if you say no, you can't be bigger than X, this certain size, you're actually going against the desires of the people and what they want and what they think is best for their human flourishing. Now, let me wrap it up here with some idea about where capitalism falls short. Here's the thing. An economic system, any economic system, falls short. You know why? Because human existence falls short. Our world falls short. An economic system, which is talking about how we interact in this fallen world, is not going to be perfect. That's the problem of so many of these economic systems that come on. They claim a utopia. I mean, that's how communism was sold in Soviet Russia and other places, is that it was this utopian society. There will be a utopian society. Whenever that happens, whenever utopia is being sold to you in this world, disaster is going to happen. It's going to be awful. The great thing about capitalism is it actually does not try to sell a utopia. It says people just act in their self-interest, and that will help the most people. Will there still be poor people? Yes. Our Lord has told us the poor will always be with us. However, it will lift them out of poverty. For example, a poor person today in America would be considered rich by the standards of human history and almost any other culture. And that's how much capitalism has lifted up our country, that even the poor are rich by the standards of many other ages. Even in poor neighborhoods, people have big screen TVs, they have cell phones, they have things like that. They have local grocery stores they can buy at. I'm not talking about the poorest of the poor, but I'm talking about just relative what we call poor make far more, have far more available to them than the poor of any other time. And so, yes, fallen man will choose evil. We will choose evil products. For example, pornography is a great example of a lot of times when people criticize capitalism, they say, well, yeah, capitalism leads to things like widespread porn. And I won't say that's not true on some level. It is true on some level. However, the problem is that immoral people will act immorally under any economic system. And so there is no way in which the state can solve that problem of immoral people. And so what I would prefer is a state that's less involved, a free market system where people can be free to live moral lives and live in a moral way, rather than a system that's forcing things and causing starvation, causing evil in the sense of throwing people in jail if they don't do exactly what the state tells them to do as far as what they produce and things like that. And so, yes, there should be laws against fraud, against force. So, for example, there'd be no abortion, no slavery. Those are not economically amoral decisions because they are force. They are force against others. So, for example, a free market system does not mean that abortion is legal or slavery is legal. It's the exact opposite, in fact. But basically, we want to restrain the state being able to tell us exactly how we have to act. And so, ultimately, I think capitalism, the free market, is the best economic system that we have, that we know of. Maybe one day somebody will think of a better one. I don't actually think that's going to happen, but it is possible. We can disagree on that. But ultimately, an immoral people will abuse any economic system. And so even the best economic system will have immorality encouraged in it. It's just a matter of how does that determine? And if we have the state enforcing immorality, or we have people freely choosing immorality, it's immoral both ways. So what we really need to do as Catholics, and this is what I'll leave you with, first and foremost, we should be concerned with proclaiming the gospel. We want people to live moral lives, lives in conformity with Jesus Christ, with the gospel. If they do that, any economic system is going to be better than a bunch of immoral people living together. A group of moral people living their faith and under any economic system is going to be better than a bunch of immoral people living under any other economic system. However, I would say capitalism, free market, will allow more flourishing of people living morally if they choose to do so. So as Catholics, what we need to do is we focus on the spiritual. We focus on encouraging people to live in conformity with the gospel. And then, basically what we're doing is we're choking the demand for immoral products like porn. Instead of trying to control the supply, we're choking the demand for them. So I think those are the type of things we should be thinking about when we're talking about different economic systems. Okay, well, I went long today, a lot to talk about. Hopefully it was helpful for people. But until next time, everybody, God love you.